Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with me here today. I so appreciate you. I'm so grateful to have you here with us every single day as we do the incredibly cool things that we can do to be the best version of ourselves in this amazing day that's called today. Today, we're going to talk about negotiating a life of purpose and peace. How do you, not only negotiate with people, but also know within yourself what is your purpose? And then negotiate that with yourself as well. How do you live the job, the life, all of those kind of things that allow you to live a place of purpose, a place of peace, a place that you really feel like you've negotiated, especially with yourself, the best version of you, so that you can then show up in the world as exactly that person. That's such an amazing thing to get to be able to do. And we want to dive really into the concept of life with purpose, life with peace, and how to negotiate that. I've got three great guests here for you today. Each of them is taking it from a little different perspective, both showing you how they do it in their lives, but also giving you some skills for how you can do it in your life so that you can glean from that and you can learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur and negotiate a life of purpose and peace for yourself. The great news, here's the best part of it. The great news is that this isn't a one and done kind of thing. This isn't something where you need to be able to have all the answers, be completely on, get it all right, and then boom, it's done forever. It's a process throughout the course of all of your life. And you do those kind of things and you learn and you grow. And negotiation, part of really what makes it good, is the capability to be able to see the opportunity to flex, to merge, to do other things that allow you to continue to thrive and to advance. And I want you to keep your ears open as you're listening today to be able to see ways that you've maybe not negotiated peace in your own life and ways that you can really truly know your purpose, know clearly exactly who you are, and then live in that purpose. And then because you know that passion and purpose of who you are, you can learn to be at peace when you negotiate how you do the different things in your life. If you love travel, then maybe you need to have a job that includes travel. But if you hate travel, if you're really a homebody, then, my goodness, please do not pick a job that has you out on the road 200-300 days out of the year. It's really those kind of things that you can negotiate with yourself. When you know your purpose, when you fulfill that, and you can also negotiate that and create a really great peace in your life, and you can live as a thriving entrepreneur. Does that make sense? All right, well, with that said then, we are going to jump right into our first guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Join me in welcoming Pete Heyman. Hey, Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing really good, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
How I show up in the world? What a great open-ended question that is. Well, I've done a little bit of a lot of things in my life. The common thread has been different forms of counseling and coaching, interspersed with a corporate career in sales, marketing, and advertising. And I'm kind of living proof it's never too late to truly discover your life purpose and live it. I've been a career and life coach now for 13 years, and I just absolutely love it.
What did it take for you to discover that? I know a lot of people that I work with, and some of them at least feel like, if maybe it's not even true, that they never really feel like they really have discovered their life purpose. So how did you go about doing that?
Well, it's been a long journey. And I led a purposeful life for a long time as an adult. Been married forever to the same partner, same woman. 48 years, we raised two sons. So my life was very purposeful in that. And I had a long 30 plus year career in sales, marketing, and advertising. However, there was a common thread in my life, even before I went into the marketing and advertising and sales world. And that was, I was a volunteer counselor in my community in New York for 12 years while I was doing that work. And I just absolutely loved it and learned so much about myself, about people, about counseling, coaching. And finally, I just realized that's really what I wanted to do. So I set out about a path to learn how to be a coach. I was coached for a year by a wonderful coach to become a coach. And I also experienced many of the programs in a program called Landmark Worldwide. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Steve. It's a fabulous personal growth program. And that's the final piece that really had me contend with what is this thing called life purpose? And I really took a good hard look at myself and realized it was that counseling and coaching that I had been doing all along on a volunteer basis that really, really is my life purpose. So I'm really happy that I discovered that. And now I have a practice called Breakthrough Career and Life Coaching. And I know I'll do that until I can't hear, talk, communicate anymore. So I'm really lucky. I can take this one to the bank.
Perfect. I love that. So, what is the secret to breaking through? What does it take for a person to be ready to even begin to start their breakthrough?
Also an excellent question. And it's different for a lot of people, but I think the common thing is first be open. Be open to taking a look inward to see what's really in your heart and likely has been in your heart for a very long time. And sometimes we get caught up into the pressures of everyday life and making a living or raising a family or whatever your life presents to you, and we neglect to really take a look at different times in our lives, what's going on in our heart? What's the message that maybe we're ignoring about ourselves and what we might do? And so it's different for everybody, but that's kind of what I like to do is help guide people to really take a look at what's been in their heart likely since they were very young that maybe they've ignored. The other factor, Steve, is that and I'm sure you know this very well as well. We all go through ages and stages of life. I don't care if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, et cetera, et cetera. You go through ages and stages. And each age and stage we go through can present challenges. Sometimes we get stuck in those challenges. And I see coaching and really breakthrough coaching as helping people discover the possibilities and the opportunities that are on the other side of that feeling of being stuck. And that's what I find great pleasure in helping people do that. And it's like a jigsaw puzzle for everybody. And you find the missing pieces or the pieces that maybe were neglected, and you put them back in place, and voila, you can discover your life purpose or repurpose your life, depending on the age or stage you're going through.
I love that. So, talk to me about some of the kind of things that you help people with. What are the different approaches? I mean, like, how does it start out? Does a person just come in typically with a specific issue they want to work on, or do you kind of help them discover even where they need to start?
Yeah, it's a combination of both, Steve. It's sometimes people really know what they want to work on, what they're really struggling with, or those challenges I talked about. Some people really understand that, and they come to me with those issues or those challenges. Other times, it's more like a general malaise. You know, it's a feeling of maybe there's more out of life that I could be getting. Maybe I'm not as fully expressive emotionally as I'd like to be. Maybe. Again, I might have this feeling of being stuck and not knowing what to do next. The key is being open. The key, that's what makes coaching work. Building a trust with your coach. That's so important. And so we listen to each other, we build up a trust, and take it from there. There are, I kind of think there's four common threads of everybody's life. Not in any particular order, but there's career, there's relationship, there's family, and then there's this thing called self-esteem and self-confidence. Any of those can be a little out of kilter, and coaching can help rebalance or break through to understand some things that are going on with that individual. And I always say to my clients, I always give a free coaching consultation for starters, and I don't limit it in terms of time. It's not 15, 20 minutes. It's however long the prospective client wants to talk to me, and I'm there to answer any questions. What is life coaching? What is career coaching? How is it different than therapy? How can it help me, meaning the person whom I'm speaking with? And they can ask me any questions they want about me, my background, my approach to coaching. And then together we decide after that discovery call or consultation whether coaching with Coach Pete is right for them. And then we go on from there. And I always say, my clients are in total control of what we talk about, the issues that we explore together, and the length of time that coaching goes on. I just ask my clients to be open, because let's say a client comes to me for career issues. They're not getting the promotions they want. They're feeling stuck in the corporate life, and they want some support with that. We start there, and we stay there until something else uncovers in the coaching process. Because those common threads that I talked about earlier, Steve, they're so interconnected. How do you separate your career life from your relationship life, from your family, from your self-esteem? They all intersect. So one may reveal, as you deal with one, it may open up some issues on the other. But it's always up to my client how long the coaching process goes on and what we talk about.
I totally love that. Let's talk a little bit about the resistance. What are the things that you run into that people are resistant to changing on? What kind of things are you finding these days?
Wow, that's a big, big question. It kind of differs person by person. Example, I've done a lot of work with men, although I love working with women as well. I've been trained to work with men. I used to be an instructor and a supervisor in a program called the Domestic Violence Program for Men. This is when I lived back in the New York area. It's a great program. And I learned so much. When you get training in something like that, first you learn so much about yourself. I learned so much about myself as a boy growing up to be a man in the United States of America, in our culture. And now I lost track of what the question was. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, the places that people are resistant to, change.
Yeah, thanks. So the reason I thought of talking about men is, and I speak from my own experience, and of course this is a generalization, it's not always true, but it is true to a great extent that boys in our society are socialized to be men. And what does that mean? It means cliches like big boys don't cry, right? Or boys will be boys. The way we socialize our little boys to be men, again, generally, it's not always true, but we kind of constrict little boys and then therefore men to be closed to their feelings. We're not allowed to have a full expression of feeling. So that can be an area, not just men's, it's true of some women as well, but it's my experience that girls raised to be women in our society are at least allowed a fuller expression of emotion, a fuller range of emotion. They're allowed to, again, this is a generalization, but they're allowed to be scared. They're allowed to express sadness. They're allowed to express need. And it's all too true that we don't allow our little boys to feel those feelings. Mostly, boys are allowed to feel anger. And so that can be a presenting issue for some, particularly men, but it could be true for women too. So whatever your sort of patterns are in your developmental years, we can take a look at in coaching to free yourself up. Sometimes it just takes, you know, shining a light on your experience and talking it through. And that brings up a question that comes up a lot, which is what's the difference between coaching and therapy or counseling? And I'm very aware of the distinction because coaching is not therapy. Many of my clients come recommended from therapists that they have. Coaching and therapy can go hand in hand. Coaching tends to be a little bit more about today and tomorrow, looking forward, setting goals. But in doing that, we can't, in coaching, if the client's willing, take a look at some of these patterns that you were kind of dealt in your formative years, and we can learn to break through and try a different way of being. I hope I'm being semi-clear with that.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk specifically about what kind of people you like to work with and how they could work with you.
Yeah, I consider my practice a generalist practice. And look, as I mentioned, I come from the world of marketing, so I know it's good to have a niche or a niche, depending on where you come from. But I don't. I'm a generalist. I work with men, I work with women. Generally, I like to say ages, 35 to 75 plus. I can work with younger, but typically it's 35 to 75 plus. And so I know that's being a generalist. But within my generalist practice, as I mentioned a little while ago, I have had a lot of experience working with men. And having been raised a boy to be a man in our culture, I'm very familiar with that. And so I have a website, I have a landing page called Mentor, capital letters MEN, small letters TOR. Isn't that brilliant? It's mentoring for men. And that can be either on a individual or group coaching basis. I have groups of mentor groups where men get together and we kind of support each other and mentor each other in some of the issues that, oops, that I just talked about being a boy raised to be a man in America. The other landing page or specialty I have, and again, it comes right out of my own experience as well, it's called Fourth Quarter Life Coaching. And the fourth quarter of life is simply another age or stage of life, presenting a lot of the same kinds of challenges that we face at other ages and stages. And I can tell you, the fourth quarter, it can be exciting, purposeful, fulfilling, and fun, just like any other stage of life. And so those are two kind of specialties I have. Mentor, my program for mentoring men, and fourth quarter life coaching, in addition to generalist practice.
I love that. So, where would a person go to work with you? What's the URL, or is LinkedIn best, or what's the best way to connect with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, and of course, and my website is it's a little long, but it says what it is. It's breakthroughwithcoachpete.com, all one word, breakthroughwithcoachpete.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Facebook, but on my website, people can see all contact information about me, my phone number. And I'm happy to start any way that makes sense. Could be an email, could be a phone call to schedule that, what I called before, that discovery call or that consultation call. And then we go from there.
I love that. Breakthroughwithcoachpete.com. Or if they're looking for you on LinkedIn, it's Peter Heyman with two N's.
That's right.
Pete, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
One thing, I just add one thing. I have a book. I know you're so into books. I wrote a book several years ago, and it's called How to, it's called Get Out of Your Own Way and Get On With It. And that's a book that's available on Amazon. And happy to talk to anybody about the book as well.
Perfect. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Did that give you some ideas of how you can discover that purpose that is you, how to live in it, how to passionately show up as the you that you were created to be? Do you have some ideas how you can do that? Do you see now how then understanding that purpose can allow you to frame a life, negotiate a life that will allow you to be at peace, first and foremost, with yourself? and then show up in the world and live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, let's jump into our first commercial break here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about negotiating a life of purpose and peace. In the first segment, we were talking about how you can discover and live a life of purpose. And you really need that in order to be able to then live in peace, negotiate the ways that you want to live your life, and understand how those really show up. You see how that really all came together. And now we're going to move forward. We're going to talk about beginning to negotiate. And we're just going to look at some of the basics of what really makes a negotiation work. How can that be a win-win? And yeah, this particular negotiation can be with yourself and with others. You need to understand the elements of that. And we've got a great guest here that is going to come in and really talk to us about the art of negotiation and how you can have it show up in your life. Are you ready for that? All right, well, and then let's jump in to our next guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Join me in welcoming Mark Raffin. Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
Very well, Steve. How are you?
I am real good, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And thank you so much for having me on your incredible show. I am the founder of a company called Negotiations Ninja, and we teach people how to make more money, reduce risk, and get better results in their negotiations. And that's most easily understood through our corporate training and all of our evangelization of it on social media.
Tell me a little bit more about what some of that means. So how do you help somebody evangelize themselves in social media?
No. So we don't help people evangelize themselves on social media. We evangelize negotiation practices, good negotiation practices on social media, and we teach people how to negotiate. So we work with corporate sales teams, corporate procurement teams, and entrepreneurs, teaching them all about what a good negotiation should look like, how to plan and prepare for their negotiations, and then ultimately how to apply all of that knowledge and implement it.
I'm glad I asked that. I would have been going completely the wrong direction the whole time.
Yes.
So with all of that in mind, give me a general idea. What does it take to be able to be, in the driver's seat, if you will, in those negotiations?
Yeah, fundamentally, Steve, it comes down to planning and preparation. The vast majority of people that we work with prior to us working with them have been winging it through most of their negotiations without even realizing that they've been winging it, because people believe that negotiations for some reason is an innate trait that some people are born with or blessed with, whilst others are not. But the reality, Steve, is that most negotiators have developed that skill set through either taking courses or through the School of Hard Knocks. Like every other skill set, negotiation is something that can be practiced and built. And so most people get good at negotiations through that practice, through that preparation, through that learning. And our goal is to dispel the myth that this is something that people are born with, and it is something, in fact, that people can develop. And so that's where we see most negotiations go well, is when people plan and prepare and they strategize for their negotiations.
So there's sounds like there's a couple of steps in there. First, you got to know who you are and what you're good at, and then strategize before the negotiation so that you can then go into the negotiation and know what you're doing in that. And did I miss any steps in there?
Yeah, I think you're mostly right. Yes, definitely know who you are and know what you're good at. Absolutely. Self-reflection and understanding is very, very important. But when it comes to planning and preparation, identify what it is you want to achieve from the negotiation. Unfortunately, far too many people go into a negotiation planning session and their major outcome that they want to achieve is that they want to get a deal or a good deal. Unfortunately, that doesn't actually mean anything because everyone wants to get a good deal going into a negotiation. So what I'm asking people to try and figure out before they go in is what actually constitutes that good deal. So if we're thinking about it from an entrepreneurship perspective, entrepreneurs unfortunately move so quickly that they don't often think about what it is they actually want to achieve out of their deals. And so they go into it and they come out maybe with a deal, and they think, oh, great, I got a deal, fantastic. But is it any good? And that's fundamentally the question that we're asking. Did you actually achieve the goals that you set out to achieve at the beginning of the negotiation? You won't know if it's actually a good deal unless you have achieved those goals. And so we need to evaluate before we even go in what it is we want. So a few examples of the things that you could want out of a negotiation as an entrepreneur could be to maximize revenue, could be to enter into a new market, could be to improve the relationship that you have with one of your clients, could be to improve communication, could be any number of those things, and perhaps all of those things. But fundamentally, unless you know what it is you're actually trying to achieve, how will you know if you've actually achieved a good deal? And so, first things first, set up your goals for your negotiations, set up how you want to potentially achieve those goals through some success drivers that you develop to help you achieve those goals, and then think about what the counterparty wants out of the negotiation. And then you're halfway there in terms of planning and preparation.
All right, so we prepare, and I love that you included in there, know what the heck it is you even want. I think that's where a lot of people go awry, is they just kind of think that they're going to go in and wing it, and somehow magically some kind of great deal is just going to, I don't know what, show up.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the mindset that a lot of people have. And you know what, Steve? It's not all their fault. I think we can blame, and I think we should blame, the media largely for this, and probably modern movies. Because if you watch movies like Wolf of Wall Street or Boiler Room or Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, those kinds of movies where these slick sales types are stringing together these magical words that somehow come together to create a deal out of thin air, you wouldn't be wrong to believe that that is the way that negotiation is, except that all of that is a lie because they've changed what negotiation is to make it more entertaining for consumer audiences. The reality is that negotiation, I'm sorry to say, is significantly more boring than that. And it requires way more strategy and way more thinking and way more planning. And good negotiation results come as a result of those things instead of just stringing together some magical words with some unusual inflections that we so commonly believe that negotiation is on TV. It's not that. It's about planning, preparation, process, and strategy.
I absolutely love that. And not to mention the fact that in all of those movies you mentioned, those actors got to have a script that they were reading from, so they were cheating.
Yeah, and you know, there are some negotiation instructors and trainers and folks who think about negotiation that say, oh, you can script your way to success. And certainly there is room for scripting in the way that you structure your sentences and what you say. But in order for a script to work effectively, you have to know what it is you're trying to achieve in the first place, because if you don't, then you're going to sound good, but you'll be negotiating for potentially all of the wrong things. So then, what good is the script anyway?
Absolutely, that makes total sense. And not to mention the fact to bring up the old phrase my dad used to always say, there's a reason why God gave us two ears and one mouth so that we'll listen more than we talk. And I'm sure you would agree that one of the chief parts to good negotiating is hearing what the other person is saying as well, and not just, bull in a china shop your way through. Your planned script, if you will.
Yeah, not just hearing what they're saying, Steve, but also ensuring that you're understanding what they're saying, which means really slowing down when you're asking them questions, really trying to lean into, okay, yes, you've said words, whomever the counterparty is. Let's just say, for example, you're talking to the counterparty. In your head, your monologue is, okay, this person has said words to me. Do I understand those words? And are they saying what they actually mean? And do they mean what they actually say? And the reason we want to reflect on that is because sometimes people will make statements and assume that we understand what they're saying. And that makes sense because communication should be that way to create some sort of reciprocal response, to create ease of communication. But sometimes we don't understand what people are saying and we assume that we understand. And then we go down sort of the garden path thinking that we understand, and that leads us astray. And so it's not just about hearing what they're saying and listening to what they're saying, but also understanding what they're saying, because what they're saying may not necessarily be what they mean. So paraphrasing back what you think you heard, and then also reflecting to them, okay, now that I think I heard what you said. Is that what you mean, or do you mean something else? And then clarifying that to ensure that you fully understand what they're saying, that's really important.
I absolutely love that. So, for somebody that's just listening right now, what are some things that they can do on their own that would help them get better at the art of negotiation?
Well, first things first, do yourself a favor and before you go into your negotiation, get a pen, a piece of paper, or use an Excel spreadsheet or something for planning and just write down what your goals are. Once you've written down what your goals are, you know, whether it's maximize revenue or improve communication or improve a relationship, whatever it might be, then think about what mechanisms you can negotiate into the deal to drive the potential agreement of those goals. So, for example, if one of your goals is to maximize revenue, ask yourself the following question: how will I maximize revenue in this agreement or in this relationship? It could be that you increase your prices. It could be that you cross-sell different products or services. It could be that you upsell into a more premium service or product. It could be that you increase volume. There are a number of different ways that you could generate the goal of maximizing revenue. We call those success drivers, primarily because they drive the successful achievement of the aspirational goal. And once you can do that, then you can start to think about what is my range of acceptable outcomes with each of those successful and success drivers. So if, for example, my aspirational goal is to maximize revenue and one of my goals is to increase prices or maximize price, Then I could determine, well, what's my worst acceptable outcome, meaning what's the lowest price that I would accept? What's my best expected outcome? What's the highest price that I could expect? And then what's a midpoint between that to give me a range of acceptable outcomes for that specific success driver? Now you've generated not only goals, but ways to achieve those goals, and you've created a range of acceptable outcomes for each of those things, which allows you to map your goals, map your priorities a lot easier, and makes your negotiations significantly easier. Once you've done that for yourself, try and think about it from the counterparty's perspective. What could their aspirational goals be? What could their success drivers be? What could their set of acceptable outcomes be? Once you've done that, you've got a pretty clear picture of what could be achieved.
I absolutely love that. So, what kind of companies, what kind of people do you work with these days?
Primarily entrepreneurs who are generating 8 to 9 figures in their business and closing 7 to 8 figure deals, or corporate sales teams and corporate procurement teams. Those are the folks that we're generally working with the most.
So, if a person or a company wanted to work with you, how would that process work? Where do they go to connect with you?
Easiest way is to go straight to our website at www.negotiations.ninja, and you can see all of our information there. And the easiest way to consume our content is to go onto Amazon or Audible and look up our book, which is 9 Secrets to Win Deals and Influence Stakeholders. You can buy that on Amazon, or you can listen to the audiobook, which is available on Audible.
I love that. Well, before I let you go, give us an insider secret into the best thing that you know now that you wish you would have known 20, 30 years ago.
The best thing that I know now that I wish I would have known 20 to
Maybe
30 years
specifically
ago.
with negotiating and not just everything in
Yeah,
life.
get help needed. It's not about you. It's about the deal. So often we warp the negotiation with our ego because we think, oh, if I get this deal, I'll be a better person. Or if I don't get this deal, I'll be a worse person. It's not about you. It's never been about you. It's about the people that you represent in the deal, and it's about the deal itself. So if you get stuck, don't just get stuck and then keep banging your head against the wall. Go get help, find an advisor, find a coach to help you through the process. It doesn't have to be us. Doesn't matter who it is. As long as they've got the right experience to help you, get the help.
And again, your book is called 9 Secrets to Win Deals and Influence Stakeholders. Mark Raffin. Mark, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
So much for having me, Steve. It was a great pleasure.
We need to listen. We need to understand. We need to find that place. All of the elements that Mark was talking to us about good negotiation. And we need to use that in our own lives too. We need to negotiate with our family members, with our friends, with our coworkers. So it's a skill that both serves us massively in work and in business and those kind of things, but it also really helps us in our own lives and in our family life and in all the other aspects of everything that we do. It's such a powerful thing, learning the true art of negotiation. And I hope you got a lot of great information out of that. We're going to take another commercial break and then we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. go to AskSteveKid.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. We're talking about negotiating a life of purpose and peace. We've looked at how to understand and live in your life's purpose. And then we talked about negotiating both in your own life as well as with the others in your life, how you can really show up in that space. And now what we want to do is we want to show you a great example of somebody who saw what was happening in their own life and created a place where they can live in that great peace because they're fulfilling their purpose and they've negotiated a life that really lets them live in their perfect place. So I really am excited to bring this guest to you as well and show you how you can use it in your life to be a thriving entrepreneur. Let's jump right in. Join me in welcoming Jason Cook. Hey, Jason, how you doing today?
Good, good. How you doing, Steve?
Doing really good, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, I appreciate the time and just the opportunity to talk with you and your audience. I was born in Utah. Let's start back at the very beginning. So a Tuesday morning at 6:30, I was born and came into the world. I'll fast forward, but I lived a few years in Utah. I was born in Utah. My family moved around in Central South America and in Europe. And then I served an LDS mission in Spain for a couple of years and worked at Adobe for 8 years doing sales. Did some lead generation on a sales team and then jumped into the entrepreneur game and started a home warranty company in 2018. I've got six kids. I'm a good father for three of them, loving wife, and just thrilled with life. I'm just so grateful to have learned the things I've learned, and I'm in a place where I want to help as many people as I can to follow and chase their dreams and to live, you know, their best lives. So it's a little bit about me.
I love that. So home warranties, what are the things that people think they know that they've got completely wrong about home warranty programs?
Well, one thing we hear all the time is, so everything's covered, right? You know, my realtor said, you know, this thing's broken and everything will be covered, right? And unfortunately, that's not the case with our company or any that I know, because that would be kind of an infinite money glitch, you know, money grown on trees. So we cover, you know, normal wear and tear things in a home, some like the appliances, your dishwasher, stove, oven, microwave, your washer, dryer, your plumbing and electrical within the foundation, and, you know, your HVAC. So those are the things that are typically covered in a home warranty. And often people will confuse homeowner's insurance with home warranty. And, you know, what we'll cover is we're covering the things that the home insurance, you know, typically would not cover. And so, yeah, it's definitely a challenging industry to be in for sure, from the sales aspect and then providing value to homeowners so that they see the value, because typically a seller is the one who's purchasing the policy for the buyer when they move in. And then we're the ones who do the warranty work that first year. And so the buyer is the one who's getting the value, but they're not the one who necessarily are paying for it. And so we're trying to establish this is worth keeping and we want them to renew at the end of the year. And our whole business model is built on that, which it's an uphill battle. But it's one that's it's fun to face because there's a lot of aspects on technology and just how we work with relationships to establish those. Good question.
Yeah. So how do you build, you know, a company that has a lot of misconceptions in it? In a way that you don't end up having a lot of people that say bad things about you. I was trying to think of a nice way of saying that.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, the nice thing about having a Google business page is, you know, you don't really have control over, you know, people writing a bad review. And honestly, that's the first thing people actually will go to is they'll default to like writing bad reviews. Those comes way more easily than someone writing a positive review. And so from our end, it really comes to the beginning of educating those who are, our business partners in the real estate industry, which, the home warranty industry is part of the real estate industry. And so realtors, title, escrow officers, loan officers, the more they know about home warranty, the better they're able to communicate what it is and what it isn't. But at the end of the day, we just give them, maybe two bullet points to share and then say, hey, but the home warranty company is going to call you after closing. And so they can help you answer any questions you have and explain how the policy works. And so education's a piece. And then just setting those expectations early on, that's helpful. But regardless, there's always going to be those outliers that there's gray areas that things that happen in a home, where water's coming in from outside and it's not actually a plumbing issue, but more of like maybe a sprinkler issue. So yeah, a lot of education, a lot of communication, and a lot of empathy when we're talking to people on the phone because they are dealing with their home. And so there's a lot of emotion around what's happening in my house and how do we get this solved as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you only
Yeah.
have to go through that once to understand just how frustrating it can be on both sides of the fence, huh?
It is. Yep.
All right. So, if you could go back to the beginning of when you started the business, what advice would you give yourself? What kind of things have you learned now that you wish you would have known right at the very beginning?
When I left Adobe, I knew I wanted to start a business and didn't go to business school. I got my bachelor's in family science. And so I thought I was going to be a marriage counselor, but I would say a lot of communication with those that are in the industry, and I'm grateful I took that step. One thing that I probably didn't do was talk to more home warranty companies, and I think I shied away from that because I didn't want it to come across as, I'm gathering all these insider, information that I'm going to use against them, when I come out as their competitor. And so I didn't want to create that bad will up front. But I could have talked to a lot more entrepreneurs about what are the challenges of doing sales and trying to handle the operations side of things, because that can really translate from one industry to another and would have been applicable. So that's one thing for sure I wish I would have done. For me, I would say that helped me. If for someone out there who's thinking about starting their business, you don't really know if you have internally what it takes, right? I don't know if you've had that same experience, Steve, but when you're starting a business, the more you do, the more you know. I'm a big planner, goal setter. I'm big on intellect and numbers. And honestly, for me, it came down to building a financial model that was the most realistic thing that I could create with everything I knew about it from online research and then calling and talking to 100 realtors. That was one big aspect of just gathering their feedback about what do you like and not like about the home warranty industry. Building the financial model, I've been a serial employee for 15 years. And there'd been enough pain in my career, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have a ton of pain, whether it's the financial side, where they're not making what they need and or want, or it's the freedom side, where they're just strapped and they don't have any time to do anything. For me, it just grew year upon year to the place where it was so painful to wake up and go and do the things that. I could see others living out their dreams and their best lives. And having the financial model for me helped show this picture of if I do these things daily, if I can get two commitments a day, this is what the financial model says. Very conservatively, I will have 100,000 in my bank account in 1 year, in 12 months from now. And I went over the numbers over and over and over again, probably 5 to 10 hours. And I tried to poke holes in it, and I had brothers who own businesses poke holes in it, and I got it to a place where I just could not poke any more holes in it, and it created such an excitement that I knew that that was going to be the reality within 1 year. And April 2019, 1 year after opening, I had 110,000 in my bank account. I had one person who had written a $10,000 check to help cover any claims I might have in the first few months because I didn't have sales, and I was able to write that check back and give them a check for $10,000, which I'd never been able to do in my entire life. And from that point, it's about doing things slow, doing things conservative. In a financial aspect, there's definitely areas where you should do risks, but just learning from others who've walked that path, I'd say. Yeah, if that answers, that was the long-winded answer to your question, but appreciate it.
No, I really appreciate that answer. And this just shows how little I know about home warranties other than the ones that I've had on houses I've bought that I've never used. But they throw it in,
Right.
you know how it goes. Do home warranties, are they regional, local? Are you national? How does that work?
Yeah, good question. And let me ask you this, Steve, on those properties that you've purchased where the seller provided the home warranty, did you ever get a welcome phone call or a brochure, or how do you know that you had a home warranty and apparently you never used it?
The one time we did try to use it, it was a complete nightmare, but that's a whole different, very long, awful story. I think in the signing of the paperwork, it said that was or something, No, in fact, actually, the one I'm thinking about, when I called and told the person that there was an issue, because that one happened to be a rent-to-own kind of a, yeah, you know what I mean? We kind of a deal. They were like, well, we have a home warranty, blah blah blah, we'll get it taken care of. And so that's how I knew about that one. It seems like in
Got
the other one it was just in the escrow office. They're like, and here's the information on your home warranty, and that's about all I ever learned about it.
it. Yeah, that is honestly, I would say, one of the elements that gives home warranty a bad reputation. Car warranties, they got their own thing going on, but home warranties, it's a lack of transparency. It's service contracts that are long, convoluted, and create too many gray areas where they can deny a claim. And for us, from the beginning, we decided that we were going to do a home warranty that was not that people would, if they interacted with us enough, they would see who we are. We're trying to do it the right way. We're trying to keep them in the loop. We have a contract that is clear and concise. And the welcome phone call, I think, is a massive element. I got lots of numbers that show because we do that welcome phone call, we have more claims. But I also know that, homeowners that don't use their policy are not going to renew either. They don't see the value in it. So that's the route that we've gone. I didn't answer your question. Would you mind just repeating it again? Was it about the
Yeah,
policy?
are home warranties, are they local,
Oh,
regional,
regional.
national, that kind of thing?
That's right. Yeah, there's probably, six or seven national home warranty companies that are fairly large. There's maybe a dozen regional ones. And then, at least here in Utah, there's, four or five local home warranty companies that service really well. And, from my experience, and for anyone who's out there who's looking at, getting home warranty, going local, I think, makes a big difference. Having boots on the ground where there's someone that you can actually talk to. There can, in with the larger companies, there could be a lot of tape, red tape, and bureaucracy and policies that make it pretty cumbersome to use. And maybe that was your experience. I had a conversation with one of my cousins who's a business owner in another state, and he had a terrible home warranty experience with this other company that it took him 30 minutes to describe it. And I've heard several like that, and maybe that's how yours was. But it's unfortunate when you have a company who is supposed to provide a service and they're not really living up to providing much of any value, which is unfortunate.
So you guys are just exclusively there in your local area.
We are, yep. We're exploring some opportunities outside of the state. There's a few different routes to market, but yeah, right now we're local and been around 7 years, and so pretty happy with the growth we've had in state, and feel like we have something pretty competitive that we've been able to push out a couple of national home warranty companies out of our state from the work we've been doing. So I think we're poised to do some other things here in the next few years.
I love that. So, I mean, I guess the question would be for people that live there in your state, and tell me what state you're in again.
Utah.
Okay, so for the people that live there in Utah, obviously, you're the person that they'd want to go for. Service is totally worth it. For people that are listening that don't live in Utah, what kind of other services or help or advice do you offer to people?
Yeah, I do. I have a lot of experience in B2B, business to business marketing for my Adobe days. And a lot of that has translated into the real estate space. And so after leaving Adobe, I worked on a real estate team doing lead generation and helped build one of the largest real estate teams in Utah and got a lot of perspective, was able to provide a lot of mentorship and learn a lot about sales and marketing. And so I do coaching. And a lot of it, a lot of it's free just because I want to help people. But if it's going to be a longer engagement, there could be some, compensation on that front. But I don't have anything formalized. But honestly, I teach some continuing education classes for those in the real estate space on video, on marketing, on mindset and habits. Being an entrepreneur in the real estate space, that's a pretty large market. You're kind of a lone wolf where you're trying to, create a customer base. And it's really all just it's you. You have to do all of it. And it takes a lot of sales to get to the point where you can have an assistant and be able to build a business that has some, pretty dependable recurring, revenue. And so, yeah, I have a lot of information that I've learned just through the experience of making all the wrong mistakes.
Absolutely, I totally get that. Well, for a person who either wants to work with your company or contact you to have you do some coaching or stuff with them, how do they get in contact with you?
Yeah, email would be best. Yeah, Jason at silverbackhw.com would be a right path to reach me.
Perfect. Well, Jason, I admire both what you put together as well as all the cool things you're doing in the world. Thank you so much for being a guest here on the show today.
Awesome. Appreciate you, Steve. Hope to have further communication in the future.
I appreciate that, and I love all that Jason is doing in the world, all that you can do with your life. And if you need home warranty help, Jason would totally be the guy to go to. But I want you to also see in there, see yourself, understand what I'm telling you constantly, and that's that you're uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose, and the world needs you. By discovering your purpose, by living in the heart and soul and core of your passion, and then negotiating with yourself, with the people in your life, with the people you work with, all those kind of things, the things that it takes so that you can live a life of peace and prosperity and hope and promise and purpose. Oh, I want that for you. Doesn't that sound like the very, very best way that you can show up every day and live your life as a thriving entrepreneur? Yeah, I agree with that too. Thanks so much for being with me here today. I appreciate you, and I hope until we're together again next time, you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
Go to asksstevekidd.com and schedule a time to talk today.